Alright, so I'm just going to go ahead and start it.
Okay.
Time. It's about 12:37 p.m.
11:37.
Oh, sorry. I was in Indiana. Alright, so the date is May 21st, 2020, and the time is approximately 11:37 a.m. And we're here at the Shelby County State's Attorney's Office. Present is myself, Special Agent Jennifer Smith, and...
Trooper Ben Schlauch, 6818.
And can you go ahead and state your name for us?
Gina Vonderhyde.
And Gina, what's your position here?
Shelby County State's Attorney.
Can I get your birth date, Gina? And a middle initial for you.
R.
Okay. And then do you just want to use the courthouse address?
Yes.
Okay, what is that?
It's 304 East Main. Shelbyville.
And as I've stated, you can see that there's a tape recorder here, correct?
Yes.
And you did consent to that being tape recorded?
I did.
Okay. And as we just briefly talked about, we're here over some of the allegations that have taken place here in the county, some of which could be criminal in nature. That's what we're here to investigate. We don't investigate as a state police civil matters. These are like criminal issues that we investigate, okay?
Uh-huh.
At this point, what I just want to get is sort of your understanding of what's going on between some of the information that's been FOIA'd and some of the things going on at the Sheriff's Department that have created some, I guess, tension here in Shelby County.
Mm-hmm. I'm aware that in response to a FOIA from the Edgar County Watchdogs, the Sheriff's Department appeared, I guess you would say, to be overpaying deputies and other employees. There was some discrepancy in hours worked versus... like what they were getting paid. So I, you know, for example, let's say Deputy Smith earns, you know, $500 every 2 weeks, and sometimes he would be working 80 hours in that pay period, and other times he would be working 60 hours in that pay period.
Okay.
As I understand it, that was the 80-60 split was kind of something that was going on with day shift, and then evening shift and night shift had some discrepancies. But day shift was like the most drastic, that 80-60. Others were split somehow differently. I do know, I mean, that the deputies are paid according to a contract with the Fraternal Order of Police. They earn a salary. The FOP contract contains some language that says deputies shall work... I think it's 5 8-hour shifts. Then it goes on to say that the employer, as I understand it to be the sheriff, may change shifts or hours or whatever according to management needs.
Okay.
So there's, you know, I'm not sure why it says shall in one spot and then turns around and says may, which, you know, kind of could be contradictory.
Like one's kind of in order and the other one's
right,
opens things up.
Right.
But it's in the contract, so.
It is.
Okay.
Yes. And so, as I understand what happened, as I understand, when Don first discovered this discrepancy in response to this FOIA, he spoke to the Edgar County Watchdogs and said, look, this appears to be a problem. We're going to correct it right away. I mean, I wasn't there for the conversation. That's what I heard later.
And you're speaking of Don Kuntz?
Correct.
Okay, so you're saying that he went to them before any of this even got brought up by them?
Before he even went to me.
Okay.
Is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Later, you know, Don came back to me and said, look, we've looked into this a little bit more. It doesn't appear to be a problem. The deputies are paid, you know, according to the salary schedule that we've negotiated. So if they work 5 hours a week for this, or if they work 70 hours a week for this, or if they work, you know, whatever, that it's okay.
It would average out eventually.
It would average out eventually, yes. He did implement a schedule, I believe, where they started doing, because this problem, you know, was in result of the deputies doing 4 10-hour shifts mm-hmm. and then 4 days off. I think he started having the deputies work a fifth day. So 5 10-hour days, I think, is how they're doing it now, and then 3 days off or something like that. Okay. So, yeah.
So there have been attempts to modify and to, I guess, level out the houring issue.
That's correct. That's okay. correct. And I suggested to our county board chairman the idea of a forensic audit to see if any, you know, what amount in fact had been overpaid and you know, sort of what we should do about it, I guess, and I think the county board chairman was generally okay with that idea. Mm-hmm. I had someone who I had worked with before by the name of John Vandenberg. The reason I'd worked with him was because we had a case on Nancy Finley from Tower Hill that was actually a state police case, and I don't remember who investigated it on behalf of the state, but they brought in John as someone okay. who could, you know, run the numbers for them or whatever. I thought he did good work. I suggested him for no other reason than, hey, you want a forensic audit? I've worked with this guy before.
Okay.
That somehow turned into, you know, he was my recommendation. Nobody wanted him because it was my recommendation. And we, you know, as it sort of became public, and I think as a result of some of the Edgar County Watchdogs doing their, you know, articles and then, you know, and things like our local paper, you know, and the county board meetings and stuff, there were a few people that came forward and said, hey, I do forensic auditing. I'm offering my services for this price. Sometime around the time, probably around the March county board meeting, mm-hmm. And I don't remember the date of it. It'd be the second Wednesday in March. I started hearing from a couple of the county board members and also from Erica, our treasurer, you know, saying, we don't need to spend the money on a forensic audit. We've got the numbers right here, you know, and this was Erica, like, running the numbers out of her
and
office.
Erica Fernhaber, correct?
Yeah, correct, Erica Fernhaber running the numbers from her office. And then sort of the COVID-19 stuff hit, and the whole issue of whether we're even doing an audit or not is, I guess, in my opinion, sort of tabled.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't attend the April meeting, the county board. I didn't attend the May meeting.
Okay.
So.
Have you talked to Fernhaber since then?
I have. So during this time, we discussed the idea of the state police investigating this issue. And I had a conversation, and I would have to look back. I could probably figure it out. But I had a conversation with Mike Campbell from mm-hmm. the state police asking him to come look at this, and he checked with someone else, I don't know who. He got back to me and he said, we don't do this kind of thing. We're not your county auditor, so to speak. And he said it in a nice way, but I mean, you know, we don't look into civil issues, kind of that. It was, you know, sort of the gist of what he said.
Like, it was like, we're not going to do your financial audit for
yeah
that type of thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And because I had communicated to him that I sort of believed this was kind of like a system-wide failure. I mean, this wasn't Don purposely overpaying deputies and then pocketing the money or whatever. So that was how I, you know, was looking at it. So anyway, since that time, you know, obviously you guys are here.
Mm-hmm.
I have had conversations with Erica. I knew that she had contacted someone, and I knew that she had asked, you know, whoever to look into it. I don't know what she said. I don't know the gist of it. I just know that, you know, she told me that the state police were looking into it. And I think as, you know, she kept getting payrolls that, you know, to her showed some discrepancy between these hours worked and stuff, I think maybe she thought that it was criminal or thinks that it's criminal in her mind. And so,
I guess what's your opinion of it? I mean, if you want to share your opinion, if not, I'm fine with that as well.
I am struggling to understand the numbers. I mean, I understand that there appears to be some kind of discrepancy. Every time I talk to Erica about it, because she is so familiar with the numbers, and mm-hmm. she's been looking at them, and you know, she kind of, to me, jumps in the middle, and I probably needed to be back here somewhere, and we're going from here, and we're, you know, keeping talking about it here. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, let me put it to you this way. I think it depends a little bit on if we consider, you know, the deputies are paid a salary, and say they're paid a salary of $30,000 a year, and then maybe they receive some overtime for that, but $30,000 is what they get whether they work, like I said, 5 hours or 20 hours or mm-hmm. whatever a pay period. Do we have a problem? Probably not. Or, you know,
because every 2 weeks their pay is going to be their pay.
Correct. Correct. So, I mean, certainly if there's a problem, it's far, far less than, you know, what it seems mm-hmm. to be. If they are hourly and they are paid by the hour, and, you know, if you're working 20 hours, you know, per pay period, and you're getting paid for 80 hours of pay period, we got a big problem.
Yes.
You know. So, I still think, I mean, does any of that translate to criminal? I don't know, but I am troubled at the fact that, you know, it does appear to be happening. That does mm-hmm. seem to be troubling to me. But I understood, like, for example, in the Nancy Finley case, I understood it because John Vandenberg explained it to me, you know, and I'm not gotten to that point with Erica's explanations. That's why I was hoping to have something, you know, like that, somebody that's a true numbers person, that, you know, being able to yes. say, well, look, this is completely out of the realm of, you know, how we should be doing business, and this is a real problem for the county, so.
Okay. What's your take on the whole firearms issue?
Well, I...
And you know what I'm talking about, correct? The 32 firearms that were...
Yes.
Seized from an incident?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Seized from an individual who, I think, was facing criminal charges. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a valid FOID card. They took the firearms from him, which I think was, you know, appropriate, certainly. And either, I guess we did resolve his case, and shortly after that person passed away. And okay. so, there we sat with the firearms, I guess. Now, at some point, Rob says that he and I had a conversation about what to do with those firearms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't specifically recall any conversation about what to do with those firearms. It was common for Rob to say, you know, hey, would you care if we would do this or that? And I'd be like, yeah, that seems like it's fine.
Okay.
I think that probably at some point Rob had a conversation saying, hey, do you care if we dispose of those firearms, like, you know, sell them or something. And I probably did say okay to that. I don't know that. I can't point to a date. I can't point to a conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't think at all it was ever posed to me, hey, can we auction these to our employees?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't okay that. Okay.
So just like a direct sale to Shelby County?
Yeah, like a public sale or something, I think, is what... I mean, like I said, I don't really recall anything, but I feel like if they would have said something like that, I would have been like, yeah, that's probably fine.
Yeah.
You know, never, ever, ever...
Is there any documentation that shows the transfer of the firearms, I guess, from... What would be his possession to the sheriff's department? They said that there was, you know, possibly disposition for his plea agreement that involved him agreeing to surrender his firearms. Is there mm-hmm. anything that documents that?
So there would have been an order of probation, I believe. And it's my handwriting, and it says forfeit firearm singular to the sheriff's department.
Firearm. I believe.
Yeah.
But it didn't give serial numbers or make, model, anything like that. Okay.
Because, and I mean, I know that, like, there was, I guess I don't know. I think what happened is there was a firearm in his possession, which is part of why he got arrested.
That was the call for service.
Yes. And he had mental health issues. I mean, this, you know, was in the street doing something crazy and somebody was troubled and called it in or something, I think. And then it was like when they discovered he had this firearm, or if he made reference, I mean, like I said, I feel like it was appropriate. They didn't just go to this guy's house and seize all his firearms, but somehow through consent or something, they figured out this guy has all these firearms and is like, okay. Look, he can't have any of them, you know? I don't recall the details.
But as far as you were concerned in terms of that case, it was the firearm that he was in possession of that...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I made a mistake and I meant to say firearms with an S, mm-hmm. and I was just writing in a hurry and put firearm singular, handed it to the judge, and it became the order. You know, that's entirely possible.
Okay.
I don't remember what...
Is there any chance that somebody can get us a copy of that?
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah. I thought I had it somewhere. Let me see if Kelly can.
Okay. Fine, just when we before
okay.
we leave, we could get a copy of that.
It's something that we can print out for you, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
One other question. This came up in sort of the discovery of documents. They had brought up like an overpayment that you had paid back
uh-huh.
from your wages.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just give me like a brief rundown of what that involved?
So when I became state's attorney in 2012, I asked for a copy of the budget. It had, you know, several line items on it, including state's attorney salary.
Mm-hmm.
That number was, I don't even know, let's say $131,000 or $133,000 or something like that. It was an even number.
Okay.
I just assumed that's what I was to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
I had... you know, been elected in, you know, a race that was pretty heated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't going to ask the outgoing state's attorney, what were you paid? We weren't speaking.
Yes.
I mean, you know, we weren't friendly. I mean,
I understand
just,
how it gets.
Yeah. So I didn't ask anybody else. I just took that off of the budget, you know, thinking that was what I was to be paid. Nobody ever told me any differently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when or how, but somebody at some point brought it up that my salary was actually, I think, $128,900.
Okay.
So when that was brought to my attention, I went in front of, I want to say, the Fees and Salaries Committee of the County Board, and we talked about, I mean, I remember at least one of them saying, well, you shouldn't, you know, it wasn't your fault. You shouldn't have to pay it back. And I said, no, I'm going to pay it back. It's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we just, the treasurer at the time was Deborah Ramey. And she just basically gave me an amount that said, you know, from, so that was like my first term. I'm on my second term. So my term would have ended in 2016. So it's from the time we figured it out. She basically averaged it out an even number of pay periods, I would just pay this amount back to the county, and by the end of that first term, it would be repaid.
Okay, so this was discovered in...
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, 14 or 15, I mean...
Gotcha. So
yeah.
During that first term...
Correct.
So you started your second term off fresh, essentially.
Correct.
With the correct...
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm aware that the Edgar County Watchdogs ran some kind of thing saying I'm 18 cents behind. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that to be true.
Yeah.
I mean, but, I mean, to the extent that it is, I'll pay the county their 18 cents. I mean, I go to trainings. I don't charge mileage. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
That's hurtful, honestly. But
well, it's just something I had to ask you about because it's, they've FOIA'd lots of documents
mm-hmm.
between pretty much every county department, and
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what we're looking into, is just
mm-hmm.
to get a big picture of what's going on. And
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not trying to accuse anybody, and I think Schalk will speak the same, you know. And I told the sheriff this. I said, we're here to fact find, get
mm-hmm.
everybody's side of the story,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, that
mm-hmm.
way we can come up with an unbiased presentation, because right now
yeah.
all we're getting is the watch group's
yeah.
FOIA requests, and they're publishing all this information, and like you said, I don't think everybody's quite understanding where the information's coming from and how it's being distributed,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense to you.
I think so. I mean, and, you know, as far as the payroll stuff and even the guns, I mean, I don't know a lot firsthand. I know what people have told me, you know? I mean,
do you know who tried to actually sell those guns? Are you aware of, like, the process that they took to get rid of them?
No. I mean, what I think happened was, I think they did some kind of bidding process. I know that Locked and Loaded from Pano was handling the paperwork, whatever transfer paperwork, I guess, that you would do with firearms. And whatever, you know, the bids were, that employee got that firearm.
To your knowledge, was it ever opened up to the public? Okay.
I believe that it was not.
Not open to the public?
Correct. Yeah.
So this was just, they took the firearms, Locked and Loaded, said do this paperwork. These people have already essentially bid and established prices?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
they were more of just the middleman for making sure that paperwork was filed through
that,
the ATF.
I believe that to be true, although I think there was maybe some discussion, as I understand it, with Locked and Loaded about, like, hey, this should bring about this price, maybe, or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, but to my knowledge, it was only something that employees had the opportunity.
Do you know where that money went? Or what the intended?
I think it was intended to go for the Shop with a Cop program. I mean, I think it actually did go in that account, as best I know. I guess it did go in that account, and then I guess was taken back out of there when, you know, they sort of rescinded, I guess, the sale, and then every employee was paid back what they paid, and they gave the gun back. So.
Did Rob disclose that to you when he brought up, you know, you think it'd be okay for us to sell these guns? We want to use that money for a Shop with a Cop.
I don't think so. I mean, you know, again, I don't really recall what exactly. I mean, he may have said, you know, yeah, it'd be a good idea to put it in with Shop with a Cop. That way we're not, I guess, sort of enriching their pocketbook or something. But I, yeah.
To your knowledge, has Erica ever gone to them directly and asked to hash out some of these discrepancies with payroll and other things?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
I know that part of how the whole payroll discrepancy came to me was as a result of some discussions that Erica and Rob were having over email.
Okay.
And it had to do with an employee who was, I think, in, like, a corrections officer. And it was kind of like, you know, they sent payroll over, and then she had some questions, like, how could this employee earn this much, or something. I don't know the gist of it, but it went back and forth a few times, and it was sort of like, oh, yeah, our mistake, you know, at the sheriff's department, it should have been this. And then she kind of questioned, no, yeah, you're right, it's actually this. And I think that raised some suspicion on her part.
And that's where the FOIAs began and then sort of the disconnect.
I think so. I think so. That's what I attribute it to, and that's just my opinion. But
Ben, do you have anything else?
No. I think earlier you said, and we can, you know, obviously go back and look at or listen to the tape, but you said that you don't think it's necessarily intentional by the sheriff's office. It could just be a lack of, you know, having the processes to kind of run the whole timekeeping process.
That's kind of what I attribute it to. Okay. And I specifically said to Erica in one of our last conversations, like, I said, am I understanding this right? I mean, have there been about three different ways of keeping time since this whole thing was brought up? And she, I mean, I think she said yes. I mean, it's kind of like she's getting information from one source, and then it's like, oh, no, we've changed to keeping time this way. And then, nope, we changed to keeping time this way. And I'm not saying that that's, you know, I'm not even saying that's sloppy necessarily on the sheriff's part. I mean, it could be that they have these ways of doing it, and instead of reporting it to her one way, they just, for whatever reason.
Well, and part of that may be, too, that there's the electronic CAD, mm-hmm. and then there's a paper way that they submit time as well.
Yeah.
And so that may be somewhat of the disconnect where they're looking at on-duty, off-duty times that are going in electronically, and sometimes there's employees that work for the sheriff's department that don't necessarily go on and off through an electronic means, such as a deputy in his squad car going 1041 mm-hmm. and 1042.
Yeah, I do believe that to be the case. Yeah.
All right, well, hey, I really appreciate your time.
No problem.
Yeah, thank you.
We're at the 2445 mark, and it is approximately 12:01 p.m. And I'll go ahead and stop the recording.
Okay.